Welcome to the Renewables Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams in the renewable sector. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent across the continuum from concept through commercialization and beyond in areas like energy storage, electric vehicles, hydrogen, solar, wind, and more. Here's your co-hosts, Mitch Robbins and Adam Soppy.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for another episode of Renewables Talent Lab. And we discuss all things talent, including building out world-class organizations. So who better to discuss that than Mike Crosby? And Mike, there's a lot there, so I have to reference my notes. Mike was a high school biology and chemistry teacher, water polo and swimming coach, assistant principal for over 10 years before becoming a recruiter. So perhaps we could talk about that. Mike worked in-house recruiting for a lot of software tech, and these are, you know, globally recognized, you know, companies, including entertainment companies, DirecTV, AT&T, Ticketmaster, Live Nation, Age of Learning, before coming over to Energy Vault in June of 2021, where he's the director of the talent acquisition, leading three people directly, loving the company, loving the industry. So we're excited to dig in there. Mike received his bachelor's in biology from Harvard, double master's prepared from Stanford, so MBA and master's in education. He lives in Los Angeles with his husband and daughter, still coaches water polo at West Hollywood Aquatics, competes in swimming and also Magic the Gathering. I'd love to pick your brain on that. Mike also serves on a board of an independent pre-K through grade school called Tessellations. I'm out of breath, Mike. Is there anything that I missed?
It's perfect, except I only have one direct report. Our talent acquisition team is three.
Your
people.
Team is three. Okay.
Director peer, and then there's a specialist report.
My apologies. So maybe indirect reports, or you're leading a team of three. So my apologies. Well, shoot. Other than making the rest of us mere mortals feel bad about ourselves, I'm grateful from that bio. Grateful to have you. Lot to uncover and unpack here. And so yeah, gosh, if you're up for it, one topic we were talking about, you and I, offline was, and I think we're both maybe guilty of it, which we saw the folks maybe playing checkers instead of chess, which is, hey, that job looks great, let me apply for that, which is not necessarily a negative or poor strategy. But another way to look at it would be, hey, what do I want to be in 12 years from now? Or where do I want to retire? And then kind of reverse engineer into that way. Is there anything you'd like to add in terms of, maybe that, that short-term job search versus, medium or long-term goals, career goals?
Certainly, Adam. And yes, this is a do as I say, not as I did. My career has been opportunistic, and you talk to a lot of recruiters and they didn't necessarily think about becoming a recruiter early in their career or when they were younger. And definitely the case with me. But it is, I have talked to plenty of candidates who do this well, who are strategic and really thinking about, hey, this is the type of job I want now, but I'm also thinking of where I want to be in 5, 10, 20 years. And that comes, and it's related to, hey, I need a job. I'm going to do a job search right now. And it versus, hey, I am going to network and I am going to think about my career pretty much at all times and not just when, oops, I got laid off, or, hey, I need to make a job search now for whatever reason. And that's something that I talk to a lot of candidates and they don't do, because it does take extra time to read posts about industries and companies that you might be interested in, read job descriptions and see what skills are listed there. And it's interesting when you talk about tech, because you think about 5, 10, 20 years, the tech may not even be big yet. So you have to, stay abreast with industry and learn about up and coming things in the technology world. But networking, some people are like, nope, I'm not looking for a job right now, Mike. I'm not interested in a conversation with you or any recruiter. And that totally makes sense when you're super busy and you're just slammed and you're just trying to keep your head above water with personal and professional obligations. But if you can squeeze a little bit of time in each week for having conversations with people that seem interesting, for thinking about, hey, is this the industry that I want to be the rest of my life in? Do I want to navigate my current company because I love it and figure out where I can go within this company? Or do I want to explore other companies and industries? And that is very much chess, as you said, thinking several moves ahead of the one that you have right there.
Yeah, thank you for that insight. And I kind of same thing. You know, I don't know if it's 80-20 or 90-10, but you can, you know, the people that you could tap on the shoulder randomly at a cocktail party and ask them, and their resume is probably up to speed. They know the key measurable outcomes that they've worked on in the last 18 months. They're ready to go. And as we both know, opportunity comes knocking a lot of times when you're not expecting it. So for those folks to have somebody like yourself or me or another outside recruiter or internal recruiter, recruiting leader, having eyes and ears on their behalf, that's so beneficial. And then because a lot of times they're hearing about opportunities they normally wouldn't have because their head's down, they're kicking butt in their current role, but they don't know that something's out there that could potentially top grade what they're doing personally and professionally. So I always advocate for that. Hey, it's great that you're happy where you're at, but one, get ahead of it because there is so much attrition in tech as we've seen, gosh, in the last 15 months. You know, I won't go too far into that, but so it's good to be prepared, but also, yeah, put yourself out there and, you know, and see what types of opportunities. And it's a good practice too, I think too. And you can kind of look in, even within own career and company and go, oh, I actually would like to pivot over there. This is what I'm actually really good at, or I love doing. And then a lot of times you can make that move internally without going outside. I guess maybe that's a good lead in too. We had also talked about pivoting renewables. Our renewable energy is an area you and I are both passionate about. I think a lot of people are as well, not to paint with a broad brush, but I think the younger generations are more mindful of it than some of the older generations. So that's exciting. A lot of really sharp people are trying to get into this industry. Some of them might be 10 or 12 years down a career path in a different industry. Maybe it's a highly regulated area like aerospace or automotive or medtech or something, but maybe not. What has been your experience in terms of, can you make that pivot? Is it too late? If it's not too late, what could somebody do to potentially position themselves to help flatten the learning curve?
Well, certainly it's never too late, right? Okay. Match Adams is a favorite movie of mine.
Love it.
You know, Robin Williams going to medical school kind of later in life,
yep.
Right? And I was a career switcher, and I will recommend What Color Is Your Parachute? Great networking tips, great goal searching. Do I want to switch careers now? How do I do that? What are the pros and cons to doing that now versus another time by Dick Bowles? And I consider it the gold standard and really the only book that I recommend on career searches. You can go to the resume chapter. You can go to the interview best practice chapter, the networking, the salary negotiation. It's a great resource. But going to specifically renewable energy, I only have the data point of Energy Vault because all those companies you mentioned before in my schools, you know, I'm not a career renewable energy person. I did study environmental science and public policy undergrad before I switched to biology. But other than that, no, I certainly didn't hope to get in this industry. It was always an interest of mine. And those were always my favorite parts, teaching biology, the environmental parts of it. But it depends on your function. For example, for the roles that I recruit in finance, in legal, in my team, the people operations team, most of us don't have too much experience, if any, in renewables before, and that was okay. However, for my commercial roles, for the sales roles, for some of the project execution, project management, and construction management roles, if you don't have renewable energy experience already, if you haven't specifically for sales sold to utilities and independent power providers, our core customers, before, and a similar product, not software, but actually energy generation or storage, you can be the best salesperson in the world. And where we are right now with Energy Vault, there's no way I can get you through the interview process. It's just a deal breaker at that point. However, we're a six-year-old company. We are hoping to be, you know, profitable soon. That's a very different situation from an established company that's been profitable for many years that is looking to build a bench with awesome A players who can take more 6 to 12 months to learn the industry, to ramp up, and then really give that company some value if they stick around longer than that. So it all depends on the company. It all depends on your actual position. And you never know till you try. And just because one company says, look, sorry, we're not going to be able to hire you at Energy Vault until you get some experience elsewhere, you know, keep that company maybe on your radar until you get the experience elsewhere and see what other companies say.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm making notes here while we're talking or while you're talking, and that's great insight. And follow companies, right? Yeah, on LinkedIn, social media, research them, connect with them so they're top of mind and vice versa. But sometimes, you know, in different industries, you kind of get into a startup or smaller company, cut your teeth per se, and then you can expand the breadth and depth because you're working at, you know, know, you're flying the plane while you're building it and you're looking for a runway at the airport. So you get to do a ton. You get to wear multiple hats. So you learn a tremendous amount in 2 or 3 years versus being at a big company. But on the flip side, like you said, in certain roles, it might serve you best to get to a bigger company that has the, you know, profitability in the runway to take a chance on somebody like yourself. And, you know, even if it is a 6 to 12 month ramp up, they can afford to do that and you can afford to do that. And then 2 or 3 years in, now you can make a jump and make a huge impact with a smaller or growing company. So yeah, that's really exciting. And we are in that weird catch 22 area. Like you said, the technology is evolving so quickly. And it was like, I've seen the recruiting, you know, the case study, I think it was a Harvard case study where, you know, the job descriptors were saying, hey, we want somebody with 7 years of, I can't remember if it was Python or C++ or whatever it was. And they're like, great. The only problem is C++ has only been out for 4 years. So you're asking for something, you know, and I think in renewables we're, you know, with the iterations coming out in hydrogen and storage and, you know, solar and wind have been around for a while, a couple of decades, but there's some cutting edge stuff every day, it seems like. So, you know, those folks are not going to necessarily have that particular background, but if they have something that's adjacent and they can make that pivot, that's really exciting to me. So I appreciate that. Another area I'd love to pick your brain. This is a huge area. It's top of mind for every company in the world, or it should be. You know, it's a big initiative, diversity, equity, and inclusion. There's a lot to unpack there. I'd love to, you know, give you the floor and see what you would like to share on that broad topic.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is earlier in my career, I actually applied internally at Ticketmaster for a director of diversity position. This is something that I was willing to give up recruiting to get into. Didn't get the job. That's fine. But this is a passion of mine. One thing that you brought up with job descriptions and minimum number of experiences that comes to mind is probably a lot of listeners may know. Men tend to apply to jobs and think that they're a good fit for jobs if they have, you know, maybe half of the requirements listed. Maybe, hey, it asks for 7 years of experience. I've got 3 years. I'm good. Versus women, again, this is generalized.
Yeah.
But women will only throw their hat in the ring for job descriptions where they're pretty much spot on. And so this is two things. One is, you know, I encourage women to, if they're anywhere close and interested in the role in the company, to give it a try, because what I have seen recruiting from all those organizations is it's not always a hard, fast requirement. And even if it is for that particular role, there might be a different role and they might really like your resume for that different role versus the one that maybe isn't even posted yet, but it's going to be posted in the next couple of weeks, that you are a fit for. So if you like the company, if you really like what the job is, even if you don't have all the skills, some of those requirements are more important than others. And it's difficult for a recruiter and a hiring manager to put, this is the most important one, and this is a nice to have. Sometimes we do that on job descriptions, but sometimes, honestly, you can't do a full prioritization of what the most important requirements are. So that is just something that comes up. Another thing that comes up on job descriptions, which I'm continuing to educate myself on, is wording and language. What was a little surprising to me is just a word like strong that you will see on a lot of job descriptions. We want strong experience in Python, C++, XYZ, whatever. That actually will dissuade women from applying. Strong, rock star, you'll see a lot. And having worked at Ticketmaster and Live Nation, that was one that we liked. But that actually discourages some women from applying. So you want to make sure I can't recommend any specific software that I have used. But educating yourself, and if your team can afford to run your job descriptions through these bias detectors, there's a lot of surprising things that can come up from there, and you can kind of fix those to reduce the bias. But, you know, one other thought on DEIJ, if I can switch the subject to employee resource groups.
Yeah.
It's interesting because my current employer and my previous employer were younger companies. They did not yet have a Latin Nation, a Pride Nation, Black Employees at Live Nation, Women Employees at Live Nation, Hero Nation for the veterans. These employee resource groups are, I think, so awesome for a company. And I was really impressed when I was interviewing for Meta, how I got the opportunity to do an informational interview with, and I got to see all of these folks, you know, working at Meta. This was years ago. And I got to say, hey, based on your background, I want to chat with you for half hour about your experiences working at this company. And we were in process of doing that at Live Nation when COVID hit. I mean, we had a 2-page PDF about like all the cool things that all the employee resource groups did. But it does become, when you're not as big a company as a Live Nation or a Meta, having the employer resource groups can be difficult. You might not have quite a critical mass for those different interests. And in addition, there can be interview fatigue. If you only have, you know, a few, say, you know, African-American employees, and they keep getting asked to interview, you know, person after person and give that kind of informational, hey, these are my experiences being an African-American at company X. Indication is you need more of them, because that takes time. That takes time to do those interviews, but they are so valuable to building, attracting, and retaining diverse employees.
It's a huge topic, obviously. And just in the last couple of years, I'm learning more about it, obviously, as we all are, and been really eye-opening all the unconscious biases that I have, that we all have, that I think most companies out there are trying to do the right thing. They're not trying to make things harder or stack the deck against other people, but it's very, I mean, the fact that you said like a rock star or a, you know, the strength or strong, I mean, which should not be the case. I know, you know, awesome rock stars that are females, many strong women, including in my life. And there is something where, you know, girls in STEM schools that are awesome in math and science, it's somehow are not on the path to becoming engineers. The engineering field in for women in engineering in the United States is very low. And that's very concerning for me. And I hope we can course correct that. I don't know. I have all the answers, but it is interesting that some words are powerful and they can dissuade folks from interviewing. And I have heard that data before or seen that data before where men, maybe it's machismo, maybe it's whatever, we're knuckleheads where we think, oh, if it's 40%, 50% fit, I'm going to apply. Whereas females are not as likely. So what can we do then to encourage, you know, everyone apply for the roles? And like you said, maybe this one isn't a perfect bullseye, but guess what? This hiring manager has something, or maybe their colleague has a, you know, spot on the team that could be a great fit. So yeah, I mean, there's so much there. Anything else that you would like to add in terms of DE&I before we move on?
Yeah, just piggyback off your point, Adam. It is interesting to see, and I'm hopeful, but I'm not very, you know, I'm kind of ignorant in terms of what sort of government programs we have out there, and not just government programs, but organizations that are trying to, you know, address this concern that you bring up. You know, there should be, you know, 50% more or less of computer science graduates who are women.
Yes.
In this country. And that's not the case. And what are we doing about that? And I'm, you know, I wasn't around for, you know, kind of this, the space race and kind of getting folks interested in STEM to, you know, beat the Soviet Union to, you know, having folks on the moon. But I think that we, you know, as an American, I think the country was rallying around a cause like that and to get people interested in scientific fields because they're harder. I'm biased because they studied biology and chemistry.
No, they are.
I think a lot of people, the average GPA of a science person at Harvard was significantly lower than the average GPA of a humanities person. And no one likes to see, you know, kind of C's and low B's. They'd rather get A's and B's. I was actually tempted to be an English major for, you know, briefly and then switched back to bio. But my point is that I am hopeful for the future. You still see metrics about not as many women, not as many people of color in the leadership roles in the C-suite. I think if we give that another 10, 20 years, I think we've made a lot of positive progress that I'd be surprised if those data didn't switch in favor of being less discriminatory.
Yeah.
But it's not good enough. I mean, we need to have companies and programs that are focused on that. I think one other thought on it is I like that there are companies out there that are looking to remove bias and make things more of an even playing field. For example, by hiding names and hiding photos.
Yeah.
Even though LinkedIn says, hey, you have a photo on your LinkedIn and you have a 7 times more chance of someone reaching out to you and starting a conversation, whether they're a recruiter or something else.
Put your
photo
on your resume or CV. Yeah.
Having a photo is best practice, but at the same time, there are disguising that to eliminate bias. And I do believe that on the whole, that is beneficial. But I think if you have someone in particular, I always challenge it. I'd be like, hey, you know, if someone is borderline, but they bring you know, DEIJ, whether that's race or nationality or religion or, you know, a gender diversity, there's a whole bunch of different types of diversity. And if I can see that, and there may be 50-50 on the job requirements, depending on the person who's reading, that actually might give them an advantage in being selected over others that don't necessarily bring that diversity. So sometimes I think those programs might be shooting folks in the shooting the diverse candidates in the foot by hiding some of that.
Because diversity. You wouldn't know that.
But it all depends on the bias in the recruiter, in the hiring manager, in the company, and the interviewers.
That's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it from that perspective. Yeah, you're right. If you're hiding names, that could be distinguishing factors. If you're hiding pictures, obviously. So, well, I share your optimism that I hope in 10 or 20 years, things look differently than boards and leadership teams, C-suites look differently than they do today. Some companies are already getting it right, or they're doing a really good job. Some are way behind, and some are in the middle there. So hopefully, like you said, with the funnel being where it is, and then, you know, people are going to grow and develop throughout their careers, and hopefully you're right. Gosh, I mean, this might be that's probably a two or three part, two or three shows in and of itself, but
only scratching the surface here. Yeah.
I want to be mindful of your time and our audience too, but any big, bold predictions, you know, 5 years out, 10 years out, maybe in our space, you know, AI is a big talking point. You know, I'm old enough to where LinkedIn was supposed to replace recruiters, job boards, like, you know, I won't name them all, but they were supposed to replace recruiters. They didn't. In fact, recruiters have done a pretty good job of using them as tools. With that said, I do think AI will replace many recruitment functions or help, maybe you and I jump into three of the 15 steps instead of running all 15 or whatever the case is. But, you know, ChatGPT and other AI platforms, I was just curious, you know, off the top of your head, are there any predictions you would like to make, or where do you see things moving?
I predict we will be using it more in the next 10, 20 years. I do think Daniel Pink's A Whole New Mind came out a while ago at this point, but he was talking about how the creativity in certain jobs, you know, gives you that job security that a machine can't replace you. And I'm biased. I find recruiting, you know, very intellectually stimulating and interesting and challenging. I think a lot of what we do is not replaceable. I mean, I have used AI sourcing tools, and I don't want to name names of the products because I haven't been very impressed with them. And the candidates that I get back from them, and I do my best to try to input all of the things that I can and talk to the owners of the software, are just getting me back candidates that are no way qualified. It's either I'm looking for back-end engineers and they're giving me front-end engineers, or I'm looking for folks that have sold to utilities and independent power producers, and I'm getting back folks who have sold solar panels to residential customers, and those are apples and oranges.
Yeah.
And I do see AI and ChatGPT and these sorts of things. I can't say I use them a lot in my everyday job right now, but I think I've seen polls and a lot of recruiters are starting to learn more. I'm certainly, you know, exploring and doing demos with more tools, and it is getting better.
Yeah.
And so I imagine that a lot of us will be using a lot more of that in the years to come.
And one thing that's exciting is it's not only getting better, but it's getting better faster. That's been a whole topic with AI. It's if it gets too good, too fast, then, you know, the genie's out of the bottle. Can we bring it back, or will it destroy humanity as we know it? I guess TBD, but to your point, yes, I agree with you that it's definitely going to be, it's here to stay, like it or not, it's here to stay. We're going to be utilizing it. So, but there are certain personal touches.
Sorry to interrupt, Adam. I just wanted to throw in one more common misconception I have heard from a lot of candidates. A lot of candidates assume that resumes are screened out by AI. In all six of those organizations, AT&T, DirecTV, Ticketmaster, Live Nation, Energy Vault, Age of Learning, not a single internal talent acquisition team that I have been on has used any software to screen out resumes.
Interesting.
It's always been a person looking at the resume and deciding yes or no. So that's a lot of companies. I think a lot of candidates think that software like that is just used everywhere, and it's not. But there are keyword searches. You do want your keywords.
Okay. I was going to say, I know, I believe that's the common I guess, misconception. And I would have said the same thing because, and I get those too. People will put all sorts of stuff on their resume, even in, you know, what was the white lettering or something where I can't see it to the naked eye, but they think the AI is picking it up and certain things that they're trying to essentially game the system on. So that's interesting. One thing I'd say too about ChatGPT or AI features, don't have it write your resume for you. It's clunky at best and they're going to catch it. It's not authentic to your voice. So use it to help you, but don't lean on it too far at this point. You know, maybe 5 years from now when it's great, you could do that. Gosh, I've learned a ton in this conversation. I will put link to What Color Is Your Parachute by Dick Bowles, A Whole New Mind by Daniel Pinks. If I'm getting those right, I'll put those in there. Any other links to our show notes that you want included, we will absolutely do that. I'm really grateful for your time. I know our audience is, you know, the community is going to get so much value from this. Any closing thoughts, Mike, or anything else that you would like to add?
Adam, it's really been a pleasure. I think I've gotten it all.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you very much for your time. And we'll hop off at this point. And everyone out listening, while they're at the gym or driving around or wherever else, be safe. And I hope you find a lot of value in this conversation.
Thanks for listening to the Renewables Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.